Look, it's Saturday, May 9th. We're looking at a labor market where men are disappearing, a triple crown that's losing its mind over a calendar, and an NCAA that's basically turning the tournament into a corporate inventory dump. Here's the thing about the American workforce. Participation among men has hit a post-1948 low, excluding the very start of the pandemic. It's a mix of early retirements, young men opting for more education, and health issues. But there's also a structural shift happening. The labor market is currently favoring sectors traditionally dominated by women, leaving a lot of men socially and economically disconnected. It's the kind of thing that fuels social unrest, especially as AI starts sniffing around the jobs that are actually left. The administration is framing tariffs as a way to save the working class, but that strategy just hit a major legal wall. A federal court ruled against the White House's replacement tariffs, which were implemented after the Supreme Court invalidated previous import taxes. This ruling is a massive blow to the protectionist agenda, and it happened right before high-stakes trade talks with Chinese leader Xi Jinping. Without these tariffs as a stable bargaining chip, the U.S. position in those negotiations is looking a lot more precarious. The court effectively told the executive branch that they can't just bypass Congress to weaponize trade policy indefinitely. Speaking of legal arms races, celebrities like Taylor Swift and Matthew McConaughey have started trademarking their voices and likenesses. They're trying to get ahead of the AI clones that are popping up everywhere. It's a smart move if you have a legal team that costs more than a mid-size house, but for everyone else, the law is still a total mess. We're basically watching the concept of personal identity get digitized and sold. And right now, the only defense is a trademark filing. Down in Tennessee, the political map just got a radical makeover. State lawmakers redrew congressional maps to effectively eliminate a seat held by a Democrat. Critics are calling it a blatant move to dilute the influence of black voters, especially now that the Supreme Court has weakened the Voting Rights Act. This isn't just a Tennessee story, it's a blueprint. If this holds, expect to see the same thing happen in every state where one party has enough power to pick their own voters. There is also some strange math going on with disaster relief. Reports indicate the administration is withholding fire protection funds from Democratic-led states like Colorado and California. Meanwhile, states like Florida, Texas, and Louisiana, which just happen to be Republican strongholds, are seeing significant allocations. It's a shitty situation when emergency preparedness becomes a partisan loyalty test. If you prioritize politics over logistics, people in the path of the next disaster are the ones who pay for it. Across the Atlantic, the UK's political landscape is fracturing. The Labour Party just took a beating in local elections, losing ground to both the right and the left. Nigel Farage's Reform UK is picking up seats in former Labour heartlands, while the Green Party is siphoning off progressive voters. Keir Starmer is trying to hold on as Labour leader, but the calls for his resignation are getting louder. The old two-party system in Britain is essentially being dismantled in real time. Back to the world of wellness, or what's left of it. There is a weird trend bubbling up with Gen Z and smoking. If you look at TikTok or Pinterest, smoking is suddenly aesthetic again. Searches for smoking poses are up 70%. But here's the thing. The data shows Gen Z isn't actually smoking more cigarettes. They're just posing with them as a middle finger to the matcha and yoga wellness culture. It's a performance of nihilism. At the same time, the biohacking crowd, think Joe Rogan and Andrew Huberman, are now pitching nicotine as a cognitive enhancer. They're pushing nicotine pouches and patches to boost focus and dopamine. Look, I'm all for a mental edge, but experts are pointing out that these benefits mostly show up in people who already have cognitive deficits. If your brain is working fine, you're mostly just signing up for a high-priced addiction. Finally, we have the story of Lindsey Vonn. The Olympic skier has been incredibly public about her recovery from a career-ending crash. She's been broadcasting her surgeries and painful rehab sessions on social media. Most elite athletes disappear when they're broken. But Vonn is using radical transparency to stay connected to the world. it's a rare moment of actual reality in a digital space that usually only cares about the podium finish. While the military is busy with hardware, the tech world is trying to convince us that the job apocalypse is actually just a very long, very expensive orientation. Here's what's happening in AI. The narrative around AI is shifting from a panicked job apocalypse toward a messy, practical integration into the economy. That's the consensus emerging from several recent reports and industry moves. According to analysis from A16Z, the fear of mass unemployment is cooling, as historical data suggests technological shifts usually lead to job diversification rather than a total wipeout. More telling, though, is how companies are actually talking to investors. An analysis of public market earnings calls shows an 8-to-1 ratio favoring workers being augmented by AI rather than substituted by it. Look, augmentation is the corporate word of the year because it sounds better than replacement. But it also reflects the reality that these tools are still pretty needy. They require what's being called harness engineering, building the products and guardrails around the core models so they actually do something useful. On Wall Street, the vibe has shifted from "is this a bubble?" to "how fast can we build the hardware?" Financial heavyweights like Jamie Dimon and Larry Fink are reporting that demand for AI infrastructure is significantly outstripping supply. We're seeing this play out in the physical world too. NVIDIA recently partnered with Corning Glass to expand fiber optic manufacturing, framing the AI boom as a catalyst for a literal American manufacturing revival. The actual tools you use every day are getting a massive overhaul to reflect this agentic push. OpenAI has released the GPT-4o model as the new default for ChatGPT. They're pushing for higher-level reasoning and a more human-like voice interface that allows for parallel tasks mid-sentence. The goal here is to make talking to an AI feel less like a walkie-talkie conversation and more like a fluid interaction. Meanwhile, Anthropic is moving Claude directly into the Microsoft 365 ecosystem. Claude is now available inside Excel, Word, and PowerPoint, which is a direct shot at Microsoft's own Copilot. To make this more useful for the suit and tie set, Anthropic introduced 10 finance-specific agent templates. These are designed to automate things like pitch book creation and know-your-customer screenings. It's a smart move. They aren't just giving you a chatbot. They're giving you a digital intern that already knows how to do a month-end close. On the technical side, Anthropic also claims a breakthrough in reading Claude's thoughts. They've developed natural language autoencoders that translate internal model activations into human-readable text. This means researchers can potentially see if a model is being deceptive or has hidden motivations before it even spits out an answer. It's a toy setup for now, but it's a big step toward actually understanding the black box of AI decision-making. If you're a Mac user, the barrier to entry just dropped. Perplexity's personal computer agent is now available to everyone on a paid plan. This thing runs locally on your machine, meaning it can actually control your computer, access your files, and navigate native apps. Giving an AI control over your desktop feels like a what-could-go-wrong moment, but it's where the industry is heading. Microsoft is also leaning into this with their Copilot Studio Agentic Workflow Builder. It's essentially a way to build complex automations using plain English. Instead of messing with nodes and connectors like you would in Zapier, you just describe the process you want, and the AI builds the logic. Finally, the debate over safety is getting more academic. AI pioneer Yoshua Bengio is proposing a plan for provably safe superintelligence. His idea is to develop AI as a non-agentic oracle, basically a supergenius that can answer questions but has zero power to actually do anything in the physical world. It sounds great on paper, but the history of tech suggests that once you build a supergenius, someone is going to give it the keys to the car just to see what happens. So, while the AI is learning to do your spreadsheets, the horse racing world is trying to figure out if it can survive its own tradition. The Preakness Stakes is currently facing a full-blown identity crisis. The race is undergoing massive structural changes, including a move from its traditional home at Pimlico to Laurel. More importantly, there is a plan in motion to shift the race's date to 4 weeks after the Kentucky Derby. The goal here is simple: survival. trainers are increasingly skipping the Preakness because they don't want to run their horses on a two-week turnaround. Owners are now routinely prioritizing races like the Belmont or the Traverse Stakes over a direct Triple Crown bid. We're already seeing the fallout, with top contenders like Crude Velocity and Golden Tempo skipping the middle jewel entirely. Look, the Triple Crown is supposed to be the pinnacle of the sport, but right now, it's an anachronism. The current five-week window is fundamentally broken, prioritizing tradition over the actual health of the horses. Critics say the two-week recovery period between the Derby and Preakness is a modern construct that just doesn't work for today's thoroughbreds. There's a Grand Slam concept being floated, spacing the races out by 4 or 5 weeks, which would allow for the kind of rematches that actually build a fan base. Churchill Downs recently dropped $85 million on the Preakness's intellectual property, so expect them to start leaning on the calendar to protect that investment. Meanwhile, the actual racing hasn't stopped for the drama. At Santa Anita's opener, a favorite named Father Ted made a massive statement, winning by 9 lengths after a long layoff. It was a hell of a return for trainer Mark Glatt. Over in Louisville, Bob Baffert's Matticat Road picked up his second career win in an allowance race, though he had to work a lot harder for it than the betting public expected. Looking ahead to the weekend, the Grade II Ruffian at Aqueduct is shaping up to be a tactical headache. You've got a clash between Eunomia and an undefeated horse named Inefficiency. Here's the interesting bit. Jockey Flavian Pratt actually chose to ride Inefficiency, a Chad Brown trainee, over Eunomia. That's a loud signal in a locker room. Down at Churchill, the William Walker Stakes is the one to watch if you're looking for future stars. Wesley Ward's outfielder is the heavy favorite based on some strong Breeders' Cup history, but keep an eye on Throckmorton. He's been consistent, and his rider Brian Hernandez Jr. knows the Churchill turf better than just about anyone. Finally, the Peter Pan Stakes at Aqueduct is emerging as the must-watch prep for the Belmont. A horse named Trendsetter is the name to circle there, after a visually dominant win in the Lexington. It's a weird time for the sport. On one hand, you have trainers doing the slow, grueling work of building individual horse careers. On the other, you have a corporate structure trying to figure out how to keep a 19th-century schedule relevant in a world that doesn't care about tradition if the best horses aren't on the track. It's hard to blame a trainer for protecting a multi-million-dollar animal, but if the Preakness becomes just another stop on the way to Saratoga, the Triple Crown as we know it is basically over. If you think the horse racing calendar is messy, wait until you see what the NCAA is doing to the bracket. Starting in 2027, the NCAA is expanding its men's and women's basketball tournaments from 68 teams to 76. To make room, they're replacing the first four with an opening round. The play here is strictly about the balance sheet. According to recent reports, the NCAA is in a precarious financial state, and this expansion is a move to squeeze an extra $131 million out of member schools over the next 6 years. By adding 8 more teams, they're creating more inventory, which is just a corporate way of saying more games to sell to CBS and TNT. Those broadcasters already pay $1.1 billion a year for the rights, and these extra games allow them to sell roughly $50 million in additional sponsorships per season. What this actually means for you is more ads and a potentially watered-down product. To hit these revenue targets, the NCAA is looking at new sponsorship categories, including digital or superimposed court ads. It's a classic revenue versus fans trade-off. The tournament accounts for 50% of all hours watched in college basketball, while the football playoff only accounts for 17%. The NCAA knows where its lunch is bought, so they're leaning on their biggest asset to keep the lights on, even if it messes with the traditional aesthetic or the timing of your bracket pools. Meanwhile, the NFL is continuing its slow-motion breakup with traditional TV. Netflix has officially picked up 3 games for the upcoming season, a Thanksgiving Eve matchup, a Saturday game, and a Christmas doubleheader. Interestingly, YouTube was reportedly cut out of this specific deal because of a disagreement over splitting rights. The league is playing a very smart, very annoying game of hide the ball. Commissioner Roger Goodell is publicly playing nice, saying the league is accommodating to fans. But behind the scenes, Fox is reportedly lobbying the government to protect the old over-the-air broadcast model from the streaming giants. For fans, it's getting expensive. Fragmenting the schedule across Netflix, Amazon, and cable means you're essentially paying a cover charge to five different bars just to watch one season. Over in the WNBA, the players are finally getting a seat at the table that isn't a folding chair. Led by Alicia Clark, the players' union used economic data to secure a landmark collective bargaining agreement. They found that WNBA players were receiving a minuscule fraction of the revenue share seen in the NBA. The new deal moves away from fixed salaries toward a revenue-sharing model that could hit 20%. By 2026, the lowest-paid player in the league is projected to earn more than the highest-paid player did in 2025. It's about time. They're also getting basic professional standards like universal housing and private travel, things that should have been standard years ago for a league that's finally being treated like the growth asset it is. Finally, the NBA is betting $3 billion on its global footprint, launching NBA Europe in October 2027. It's a massive upfront investment designed to ensure team solvency and tap into the international market. Between this and the WNBA surge, the business of basketball is looking more like a global arms race than a domestic sport. So, between the bracket expansion and the streaming subscriptions, you probably feel like you have less time and money than ever. Here's how people are trying to fix that. Author Laura Vanderkam has released a new book called Big Time, which argues that the feeling of being overwhelmed isn't a math problem, but a perspective one. She reports that by viewing life in 168-hour weekly blocks, rather than single days, people can find significantly more time abundance. The book outlines a ringmaster strategy for career, relationships, and self, and claims that job crafting, adding small social moments or intentional breaks, leads to statistically significant rises in work satisfaction. Look, I'm always skeptical of someone telling me I actually have more time than I think I do while I'm staring at a sink full of dishes. But the 168-hour math is hard to argue with. It's a lot easier to find an hour for the gym when you aren't trying to squeeze it into a Tuesday that's already on fire. In the tech space, Google is making a move to undercut the high-end wearable market. They've launched the Fitbit Era, a screenless health tracker priced at $100. This is a direct shot at competitors like Whoop and Oura, which often require $300 hardware or steep annual subscriptions. It's a smart play. Not everyone wants a second miniature smartphone strapped to their wrist, vibrating every time someone likes a tweet. Sometimes you just want the data without the digital noise. Meanwhile, Speechify CEO Cliff Weitzman is out here advocating for what he calls a warrior ethos in productivity. His company is currently testing thousands of AI-generated ads daily and prioritizing adversity quotient, or AQ, over traditional IQ when hiring. He's basically betting that in an AI-driven world, the only thing that matters is how much crap you can endure while iterating. It sounds exhausting, honestly. It's the polar opposite of Vanderkam's intentional leisure. But I guess if you want to run a company where AI tokens might eventually cost more than your payroll, you don't get many peaceful Thursdays. Speaking of enduring things, if you're still playing Fantasy Premier League, you're currently in the middle of a rotation minefield. Heading into Game Week 36, the headline isn't just who's playing, but who's being bubble-wrapped. We are seeing a massive spike in rotation risk across the league as European finals and secured table positions start to dictate lineups more than actual league points do. The most immediate impact is at Crystal Palace. With a European final on the horizon, the club is prioritizing rest for key players. While defenders like Maxence Lacroix and Daniel Munoz are expected to be more reliable for minutes, there is significant uncertainty around attacking assets like Wilfried Zaha and Jean-Philippe Mateta. It's a classic case of a team having bigger fish to fry, which makes relying on their stars for the upcoming double game week a massive gamble. It's a similar story at Aston Villa. They're balancing European commitments with the need to secure Champions League qualification. Morgan Rodgers is expected to start against Burnley, but there are growing concerns about Ollie Watkins' minutes after a heavy run of full matches. If you're holding Villa assets, you're essentially betting that Unai Emery values fourth place enough to risk his starters' legs before their final. Elsewhere, the injury list is shifting the landscape for several clubs. Newcastle and Leeds are dealing with a vacuum at right back due to multiple absences. Noah Okafor has been ruled out for the next two games, creating a direct tactical headache for his side. On the flip side, Liverpool is getting a boost with Mohamed Salah and Alisson returning, and Manchester City might see Ruben Dias and Josko Gvardiol back in the mix. However, Rodri and Salah are still facing late fitness tests, so don't go clicking confirm on those transfers until the last possible second. Now for the so what. Look, the traditional nothing to play for logic is usually a green light for goals, but this year it's a red flag for rotation. Teams like Manchester United and Sunderland are signaling they'll give fringe players a run, which is great for them, but shitty for your FPL rank if you're tripled up on their starters. The smart move here, at least according to the data coming out of the latest briefings, is to pivot toward motivation. Arsenal is still chasing the title, which makes their assets like Bukayo Saka far more dependable than a safe pick on a team already planning their summer holidays. We're also seeing a mass exodus from Chelsea due to their dire form, while Brighton's underlying numbers are actually holding up well enough to justify looking at their midfielders if you're on a budget. The reality is that we've reached the chaos phase of the season. Following the herd and picking high ownership players isn't the shield it was in October. If you're trailing in your mini-league, taking a swing on a differential pick from a team with a clear objective is probably the only way you're making up ground. Just don't be surprised when a manager decides their star striker needs a nap right when you need him most. All right, before I let you go, here's a few more things that caught my eye. TikTok is officially coming for heavy metal. Songwriters are starting to ditch traditional structures to prioritize clip moments, basically writing the breakdown first just so it can go viral. It's efficient, sure, but it's making the actual songs feel like an afterthought to the algorithm, which honestly is a pretty depressing way to make art. Over in the UK, the two-party system is essentially on life support. Labour just got absolutely hammered in the council elections, putting up numbers that make Margaret Thatcher's worst year look like a victory lap. People are checking out of the mainstream options in droves, and the apocalyptic label the analysts are using doesn't actually feel like hyperbole for once. If you're still messing with Fantasy Premier League, look, the numbers on Crystal Palace defenders are objectively trash right now. They've got a 36% chance of a clean sheet, and they're averaging less than a goal a game. It's a high-risk play that'll probably just leave you annoyed on a Saturday afternoon. But if you're desperate for a differential, I guess that's your funeral. Finally, the global supply chain is hitting the hobbyist world again, this time with a shortage of printed circuit boards. Between copper prices spiking and logistics bottlenecks, getting boards fabricated is about to get way more expensive. We might actually see a comeback for at-home manufacturing, which is great if you miss the smell of ferric chloride in your kitchen, but a total pain in the ass for everyone else. So yeah, fun times. Anyway, that's the quick hits.